Well, now, I have a number of things tonight. So I have one unpleasant announcement. I better get that off first so we can get to more pleasant things. I have had the unpleasant duty to disfellowship a man this week, not from the headquarters church, but nearby. The name is Buck Taylor of Bellflower. He's been attending, I think, most of the time at Norwalk. I believe we have both morning and afternoon church there. I think the morning one, but I understand he isn't staying right there. He's been going around from one church to another. And he's one of those that are in a divorce and remarriage case. And he wrote me a letter, which he delivered in person, but I didn't see him. He left it at my secretary's desk, in which he went over the unbelievable sins that he had committed, practically all sex sins. And I won't try to make you sick at the stomach, like they did some of our ministers that had first read of his case. But he wrote it as if he were bragging about, well, if there's any deviation, any perversion, any wrong way of using sex that he didn't think of and try, I don't know, because I think he had the devil helping him. Now, what he had done after living a married life for 6 years and then having left that wife for 6 years while he married another, he had called up that wife, former wife, on the telephone and told her of these revolting things. Bestiality, homosexuality, everything you could think of. And he did it for a purpose. And then he says, now, if you had known I'd done all those things before I married you, would you have married me? The whole idea being to get her to say she certainly wouldn't have, and then he could come to us ministers and say, you see, I defrauded her, so that marriage didn't count. So now I'm free to go out and marry somebody. The minute I read that, and that dirty trick, I don't know whether they thought he could pull a wool over God's ministers and deceive us like he apparently was trying to do to his former wife. It made her so sick she couldn't answer. She hung up and answered by letter, but she said she surely would not have married him. So he says, see, I defrauded her, so the marriage didn't count. He has been going around different people that have a divorce and remarriage problem. Probably some of you are here now. But I called the three ministers here when I had to fly in from Colorado. The one who baptized him, the one who was his minister after he came into the church for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and the one who's been his pastor for the last year or two. I went into it with other ministers who have been familiar with this case, and they brought me many additional records. Now I found more things that I didn't know, and that is that he's been going to different churches, and he's been, especially to women when he can talk to them, and saying that Mr. Armstrong is all wrong, that Mr. Neff, who is sort of a coordinator on this kind of problems, was using human reason, but he is holy. He is a holy man because he says he reads in the Bible that Jesus paid for his sins. I never heard a word about repentance. So I began to wonder, why was the man ever baptized? Well, it appears that he really was repentant at that time. At least it was enough to cause the minister who baptized him to really believe. And he seemed to be that way and very interested in the work for some little time. Then he went off the other way again. But he's saying things against God's ministers, and he is giving the impression that I am wrong, our ministers are wrong, and I guess getting the idea around that because we have not yet been able to conclude the in-depth re-study that we have decided to go into on the divorce and remarriage problem, that we know we're wrong, that I've been wrong all these years, and that several are expecting that I will, and I haven't got the guts to come out and tell you I've been wrong. You know, I resent that sort of thing, brethren. I have proved that I can come out and admit when I've been wrong under the most humiliating circumstances. I don't have to prove it. All you have to do is look at the fruits. Who did God call and choose to raise up this church in the first place? Has it been raised up? What are the fruits? Who else is preaching the gospel? Do you know anyone preaching the real gospel of Jesus Christ except those in this church? If you do, you know more than I do, because I don't know any. Christ is not the gospel. Believing on Christ is not believing the gospel. He was the messenger who brought the gospel. That has not been preached for 18 and a half centuries. And I want to tell you, if God has let me be deceiving all you people all these years, Jesus Christ, the head of this church, has been derelict in his duty. You believe that? Now, I have agreed to go into a still further and a more in-depth study of that question. And we've been making quite a little progress. But I'm also called to get that gospel to the world, and it's worldwide, and sometimes I have to be across the other side of the world. And then I get some criticism. And some of you apparently think Jesus Christ is not able to take care of his job. You've got to do it for him. And I wish you would take a little admonition and stop that, because you're doing it to your own hurt, not to mine. And we're getting to these things as fast as we can. Now, I've made quite an in-depth study of this already. But we've got many little things. I've assigned this committee and that one, and two or three men, to dig into the technical phase of this and that and the other little twig question that has a bearing on it. That may not even change the ultimate decision, but we want to be sure. We want to go all the way on it. And when I get through, let me tell you that the next book that I write on this, not going to leave one stone unturned. Now, I know there is a book out. We had an anonymous letter by one that said, we've all read that book, Mr. Armstrong. But he couldn't sign his name. If that man is here, I say you're a coward, and I say you shouldn't be in the church. He didn't have the face to come and face me. And he said, that book is not the truth. And he said, we're all just waiting, Mr. Armstrong, to see if you accept it. If you don't, we know you're not God's minister and this isn't God's church. Well, I ask you, the man who wrote that book, what are his fruits? What has he ever done? Has he ever preached the gospel to the world? Did he raise up a big church? Now, I've studied that book. I've studied another book that was only a manuscript, never been published. None of you have seen it, I think. I doubt if you have, unless he had more than one copy. He went right through my book with it, and verse by verse, paragraph by paragraph, and tried to knock it in the head. He didn't. He just didn't. I'm not ready to make the final announcement or decision. We're going to get to it as quick as we can, and brethren, you're going to have to be patient. You see, patience is one of the great virtues, and if you have to learn a little patience in this case, that's good for you. But I'm going to say a little bit tonight, and this is not final. Romans 16. No, first, that's about this man. I want to say this first. Romans 16, verse 17. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. So I have to mark this man. And during the time I talked to him, the whole attitude was, we are wrong, he is right. I heard not one bit of anything of being ashamed of what he had done. He said, yeah, that was all before I was converted, Mr. Armstrong. Well, I'm not putting him out for the things he did back then. It's for the things he's been doing lately and has been doing right up till now. He's been causing division. So, I'll repeat that name just once again. Buck Taylor. I never saw him before, to my knowledge. But I talked pretty straight to him. Any man that has done the foul, filthy, rotten, stinking, dirty thing that man has done and doesn't seem to show any sign of guilt or repentance in any way, and he can't see why he should have to suffer. Brother, let me tell you something. God forgives. And we've got a lot of people here, it seems, who feel it's all right to sin, or if you do, and then God forgives it, but you don't have to pay any further penalty one way or the other. You shouldn't have to suffer anymore at all from what you've done. God forgave David in the case of Bathsheba and Uriah. But was that all? Did David have to suffer anything physically? He lost a son that he loved. David numbered Israel. Actually, of the two, that was a worse sin. David was tempted with the flesh when he saw a nude woman taking a bath that must have had a very beautiful body. Then he weakened, and after he had committed that sin, now he was like a rat trying to escape into this and that and the other corner. He didn't know what to do, so he had the woman's husband sent home, hoping that he would sleep with her and they'd think the child would be his. And he didn't sleep with her. And then he was at his wit's end. But he didn't pray. He didn't go to God. He used his own human reason on what to do. This man was a soldier, and he had him sent back in the army and put up where he'd get killed. And then when he was dead, he took the woman and married her to make it look all right. And that wasn't all right. Now, David repented very bitterly from that. But again, God said, don't number Israel. So later he decided to number Israel. Now, this was flagrant rebellion and disobedience. Wasn't it Joab he called to do the job? He called on Joab. Says, Joab, go number Israel. Take a census. Well, he was flabbergasted. He said, you can't do that. You know that God has commanded you not to do that. He says, you go number Israel. He was even reminded by the man. And he did that deliberately. God gave him, God forgave him, but God gave him three choices of material, physical punishment. And that cost thousands of lives of his people. Brethren, God says not in vain that what we sow we're going to have to reap. When I told this man what I was having to do, he said, oh, you don't have to do that. I don't want to be put out of the church. He didn't say, I'm sorry for these things. He didn't admit to some of the things that we found. I had the minister right there with me to give the testimony of what he found just the night before he'd been doing. I didn't see any repentance there. But he is not allowed to talk to any one of you, and if you talk to him, you'll be in the same boat with him. I left the door open this way. There's one person in the church he can talk to, and that's his pastor, his minister. So if he does repent, his minister is fully aware of things now, and I am persuaded, well, give him an absolutely fair and just judgment on whether he is coming to be repentant or not. Now, Let's get rid of that. That's the unpleasant news. There's nothing unpleasant about the progress of the work, brethren. Oh, I got a little something here on that now before I go further. And then I'm going to go a little bit into this divorce and remarriage. Increase for the month to date in letters, 59.4%. For the year, 77.4%. That's the barometer that indicates things are going to start going good and fast and quick. Now, I attended the last Sunday. We flew from New York to the campus in Texas, Big Sandy. We were there about 4 hours or so. We left the Princess Sukuma there. Incidentally, she put on one of those exhibitions of her fabrics and dresses and things from Thailand, just as she did here in New York, with 150 very important people there, with the Thailand consulate. And there were representatives of the women's magazines there, too. And she put on one. She came back to Big Sandy with us and just left there yesterday after she had put on another one of those exhibitions there. And I heard that this went over real fine and everybody was very much pleased with it. Now, the mail has gone up. And incidentally, at Dallas, they had an auditorium seating 3,800, I believe it was. Anybody here know that's different? I'm pretty sure that's it. Well, it was very bad weather Sunday night. It was threatening and one thing and another and some rain. So they only had every seat filled Sunday night. Saturday night, they broke all records for any attendance at this new pavilion. I think it's new. At the fairgrounds. And they had every seat filled. They also had about 1,500 or more in the lobbies, listening in, I guess, on loudspeakers, and they sent a few hundred away. And it was almost that much on Friday night. Overflow crowd. And that is good. I saw one thing that just almost made me mad Saturday night, or Sunday night. They turned the lights out so dark you couldn't see anyone in the audience. You couldn't see anything on the stage but the bright light right on Ted and the podium. And you know, with black all around it, that sort of hurts your eyes. And I don't know, if we don't get after these electricians that are union men, you know, in these local auditoriums, they'll do things like that. But the program itself was just great. And I tell you, they've got now all of the, you might call it stage setting, I don't know, because the band starts out, and then Joe Bauer comes out and makes the opening announcement, and while he's talking, the chorale will come in and get them and go right on with their singing, and then he introduces Ted, and Ted comes out with some announcements, some things he wants to say, not the sermon yet, and then he announces, Dan Truitt, who comes out, and he is just really, I think you can say he's tremendous at least in his songs. And the chorale sing with him, in the background, of course. And then the general lights go off, and the curtain comes down, the pulpit comes up, and then Ted comes into the sermon. And it's a very effective way of presenting it. Very effective. And I tell you, it is doing more good than you realize. I think it's adding an average of more than 100 members, isn't it? Does anybody know just what the results are? I think it's something like that, or more than that, at every appearance. But here's another benefit that I had not realized. I found that, I don't know which city it was, which appearance, but a little while before, when we knew that one of these public appearances was coming there, they made a survey calling 1,000 people on the telephone in that area. asking him if they were familiar with the name of the world tomorrow. Are you familiar with the name Garner Ted Armstrong? Are you familiar with the name Herbert W. Armstrong? Are you familiar with the name The Plain Truth? You know what that is. Are you familiar with Ambassador College? You know what that is, where it is. And so on. Now, I think the amount that were was very encouraging. I don't remember if it was 30 or 60%, but anyway, I'll have to get the actual figures. I want them. I don't have them exact. Anyway, then, after the personal appearance, and I don't remember now, was it a week after, 2 or 3 weeks, or a month? Anyway, they made another one for another different 1,000 people. And I think that the number that we're now familiar with those names had gone up something like, I don't know, 15, 18, or 20%. So, you see, just in public relations, of people feeling that they know who we are and getting some interest, that is doing a great deal that I hadn't realized at all. Well, now, in one sense, the money is down because we were having holiday offerings that earlier last year, and we haven't got them yet this year, but taking that out, because that'll be made up later, the total income for the month to date is over 12%. It's right up around where budget is now, and it's bringing up the year to date gradually. It's up to 7.9 now, and of course we have the holy days beginning this next week now, so it does mean we're skyrocketing, but it's coming up. And it's coming up gradually, and it's going to continue coming up. And I'll tell you, now Garner Ted feels that we're going to have the biggest year by far we've ever had, and we're going to have so many new members in this church this year, that at the end of the year, you're really going to be surprised. And I feel the same way about it. Mr. Charles Hunting in England has expressed the same thing. And by the way, a man that represents us in the Arab nations is here. He's not here in the church tonight, but because he's out of the city, but he is here. And we're making definite plans, and I'm to meet leaders in the Arab world in June. And so on. Well, now, let me see. For those that are waiting on a decision on this, they call them the DNR, divorce and remarriage problem, there are little things. For example, I wanted to be absolutely sure with every technical and authoritative history from history or from study or from authorities that we can get what is meant in the 22nd chapter of Deuteronomy about the tokens of virginity. Now, you find even the experts have got a lot of disagreement about it. That may not have much to do with the answer one way or the other. But I've been doing quite a little of my own study, which when I've had time on this, I've assigned many things to others, and just as soon as we can get together, I think we can just wrap this whole thing up pretty soon now. My own study indicates that God has led his church and has not let his church be deceiving so many people all through these years. The decision we have always had is being sustained and not overthrown. The final rendering of it is not yet ready. But most stress is laid on one Greek word, porneia. And that's where they are making their big mistake. And it's a huge mistake. Romans 7. And, let's see. Beginning with verse 1. Know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law, how that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives? Now, the gospel is the gospel of the government of God. You never heard of any government of any nation that was trying to govern the people without any law. You just never did. Christ came as the mediator of the new covenant, on the messenger of the new covenant. And we are candidates to make that covenant with him. It's a marriage covenant. And that marriage covenant, like the old covenant, will set us up as a kingdom. That covenant has laws. God says he's going to put them in our minds and hearts and so on. Now, the only trouble of the old covenant is that Israel didn't obey. We have to prove our obedience before we even get in it this time. For the woman which hath a husband is bound by the law to her husband until he commits adultery or until she does. It doesn't say that, does it? Is bound by the law to her husband so long as he lives. Yeah, but, Mr. Armstrong, don't you see something else somewhere else? Well, it doesn't tear that down. The Bible doesn't contradict itself, brethren. Marriage is for life. And every wedding I've performed, I have said that and bound them that way. So long as he lives. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she be married to another man, will she claim porneia or what she claims? She shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is an adulteress, though she be married to another. Now, we say, well, maybe Christ died, so we're freed from the law. Are we? Why did he say up here, know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law, that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives. The law isn't done away. But the law itself says that when the husband dies, she's not married to him anymore. It isn't the law that's done away, it's just what the law says. Now, nothing is going to overthrow it. I'm not going into all the scriptures tonight. But I will. And believe me, it's going to be a voluminous book when I come out with it. And I'm not going to give any of you one way to squirm one way or the other. I'm going to meet Jesus Christ some of these days, and I'm not going to have him say, Herbert Armstrong, why did you try to just let people have their own way for their physical desires and one thing and another, contrary to my law. I'm not going to have him say that to me. Now, if we've got some people who are going to decide that this, that I'm not God's minister and that this is not his church, I just say, you don't belong here anyhow. And I just as soon see a house cleaning. Matthew 5. I'll just take that one. And Matthew, 19 is practically the same thing. Matthew 5, where Jesus, on the so-called Sermon on the Mount, was saying, it hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. That's what they were saying in the Old Testament time, and some of them there. And you know, there was this school of two leaders on this divorce and remarriage question. And now here's what some of them are trying to do. They're trying to show which one Jesus agreed with. Answer, Jesus didn't agree with either one. They were both wrong. So some of them write a book and try to say that one of those was right, and Jesus agreed with them. No, he didn't. He didn't agree with either one of them. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, the Greek word is porneia, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. Now they're trying to make it say that porneia means adultery. Well, read it that way. I say to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, saving it be for the cause of adultery, causes her to commit adultery. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That makes sense to you? Not the way I read my Bible. All right. The word porneia does not mean adultery. Now, they try to say it does. I'll tell you what their trick is. And that's exactly what it is, the deception and the trick. It does not mean there is a word for adultery. And if it was nothing but plain adultery, it would use the word adultery. Porneia is a word that is much more inclusive. It means an act committed by an unmarried person. It also means harlotry, which is repeated sex sins, whether in or before or in marriage. It also means perversion. It would include homosexuality, bestiality, everything of that kind. In other words, it has a wide scope of meaning. But it is not just plain adultery. Now they say, yes, but God divorced Israel for adultery. And Israel had committed adultery. And then it shows in the Septuagint, where it's translated into Greek, it'll use the porneia, and in the Hebrew, the equivalent word, that she had gone out and committed that. So therefore, you see, it does mean adultery, doesn't it? Oh, no, it doesn't. What did Israel do? Israel did not commit mere adultery. An adultery is when a woman goes out and has a relation with another man. Now, she might have done it more than once. It might have been later with a second man. It could maybe be a third. But that isn't what Israel did. Israel went out and committed harlotry. A harlot is one who may have 15 or 20 men standing in line. Harlotry is one who will take them on one after another. And God says, you will run around lying with everyone you could find. Maybe hundreds or thousands of times. Harlotry is one, and God says, the harlot charges for her service, but you go out and pay people to come with you. You see, Israel was in the position of the wife. It was the kind of adultery that was multiplied many, many, many times over, and that's not plain adultery. So it does use the word adultery, but it also uses the word that means porneia. That was something else again. But now, in the 5th chapter, in the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew, it is not referring to that. I will say that a man could put away his wife for this porneia, in other words, repeated acts again and again, acting like a harlot, but he couldn't marry anyone else. God did put Israel away for that. But who else did God go out and marry? Now, you answer me that. God didn't marry anyone else. Neither does he allow any of us to do it. Brethren, we've got to realize that sin is sin. And God doesn't let us just go and sin and sin and sin all we want to and cover it up with the blood of Christ. We've got to realize the enormity of sin. And sometimes we've made a bed and we've got to lie in it. Well, I feel sorry for people that have made mistakes and now they can't have a husband or a wife. I haven't had a wife for over 6 years. And I would be free to marry. It's not because I couldn't. I don't think God wants me to marry. He gave me a wife and let me have her for 50 years and gave me the finest wife that I know I could ever have had. The only woman I've ever seen in all my life that I wanted to marry or wanted to have to be my wife. I've known for many other very, very fine women. I've probably got several hundred of you right here in front of me now. That doesn't mean I want you to be my wife. Those of you that are already married, I just want you to be the wife of your own husband. I don't want to try to take you away from him. Brethren, I think we need to be a little more concerned about the marriage to Christ, the spiritual marriage that's coming. So I'll just tell you now, that I myself cannot see one scintilla of an argument so far that is going to overthrow the teaching of God's church on divorce and remarriage. I don't want to give you any false hopes that maybe we're going to say, you can go out and get married. If we would do that, brethren, do you know what would happen in less than another 3 months? I'll bet you there will be hundreds and hundreds of members of the Worldwide Church of God that would divorce, and then they'd go out and marry someone else. And that would be the end of the Worldwide Church of God, and Jesus Christ would spew us out of his mouth. And anyone who does go and do that will get spewed out. I have to warn you. Sometimes we do have to suffer a little more yet for a while. Well, now, Matthew 19. Yeah, I better just turn to Matthew 19 while we're at it. Beginning with verse 5. Jesus said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Yeah, but you see, here's a circumstance under which we can disobey that and go and put asunder. Oh, no. In my judgment, there is no place. And I've read these things, and I know that you people need ministers. And that's one of the duties of a minister, because lay members can be so easily deceived. God has given us the principles of his law that cover every phase of life, but they don't give in detail detailed instructions about everyone. You have to know how to apply it. That's the purpose that God has called some of his ministers for. They say unto him, well, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? You notice what they said? That Moses commanded it. Jesus answered and said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you. Allowed. He didn't command it. Suffered you to put away your wives. Is there anything there that says he can go and get married again? You go back in the 24th chapter of Deuteronomy and you'll see he couldn't take her back again if she'd ever married another man, because the word is confusion in Israel. Or abomination. But what did Jesus say? From the beginning it was not so. From the beginning in the law of God, you are bound for life. Jesus didn't say that's all right. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife except it be for fornication. Now someone will say, well, what if it was repeated adultery over and over until it did become porneia? Well, you could put your wife away, but you couldn't marry her again, because God gave us that example, brethren. And it doesn't here say anything to the contrary. And since that we know you can't do that, this here is talking about something committed before marriage, just as I have always said it did. And going into the original Greek words doesn't change it one iota. Now, if you want to believe some man that God is not using, that's trying to mislead you and deceive you, you go ahead and marry someone else, and you'll have your reward right now, a physical one, but you'll never get into God's kingdom. And I say that by the authority of Jesus Christ. I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her, which is put away, doth commit adultery. I have something. Now, Mr. Neff has written something. He's one of the men that are working on this. I'm going to read you one paragraph, because he puts it in a way that makes it quite plain, I think. Christ said, there is only one reason to put away, and that is porneia. He did not say that once God joined together, man could then put asunder for porneia. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that the one that God's already joined you to, if he puts her away except for porneia. After the covenant of marriage is made, but where porneia exists, unknown to the offended party, the innocent party, God does not yet join the couple. Once the porneia is discovered, based on the principle, not of Deuteronomy 24, as they all want to make it out, but it's Deuteronomy 22, another passage in the Bible altogether, 22 verse 13, the offended spouse may put away what God has not yet joined. That's the expression that makes it very plain. All that Jesus Christ said is you can put away what God has not yet joined, and that's what I've been saying all these years, that God had not joined it. There is no divorce once you're really married and God is bound. What God has bound is for life. Let not man put asunder. Brother, you better be glad you're in a church that has got the guts to follow the law of God. And not just give people their own way and every little desire and every whim of the way they'd like to have it. God gives us everything, but so many of us are like Adam and Eve. The devil says, God didn't give it all to you, did he? He kept back one free for himself. So Adam and Eve weren't satisfied. They had to have it all. You know, I don't have everything I might wish to have. But I do thank God for what he's given me. I think we better all do that. Now, in the Old Testament, God divorced Israel not for adultery. Just one adultery might have been different. But for harlotry, constantly multiplied. You think of a harlot as a married woman cheating on her husband? I never thought of a harlot like that. I think you'd find harlots are unmarried women. What's this old mother whore called in the 17th chapter of Revelation? It doesn't say adultery. It's porneia, which shows it's before marriage. And she was supposed to be the affianced bride of Christ if she's his church. But she's committing adultery with the kings of this world instead of the king of God's kingdom. That's what it means about Israel. But Jesus, or God, well, it was Jesus, did not free himself to marry another. And neither is one today free to do so. Now, in the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians, the Apostle Paul does show us conditions under which we can separate. But just separating and remaining separated